Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credit. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speeds. See store for details.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Backnine Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Well, Carlos, I'm a little sad. I'm still trying to cope with the fact that the baseball season is over for my Indians. They, of course, were defeated by the hated Yankees in the first round of the Major League Baseball playoffs. But there is a ton of golf happening around the world, and that's a good thing. Carlos, this is the time of year when golf truly is an international sport. The focus is put on events held outside the continental U.S. We have the PGA Tour going from Malaysia to Korea and then to China. The LPGA leaves Korea, heads over to Taiwan before going to Malaysia, Japan, and China. The European Tour is in Spain this week, winding down its regular season. They hook up with the PGA Tour for the WGC HSBC in China next week, and then their Race to Dubai final series had events in Turkey, South Africa, and Dubai. The Champions Tour is the only major golf tour in the country right now as they begin the Charles Schwab Cup playoffs right here on American soil. So, Carlos, tonight we are truly giving our listeners a world tour of golf. So let's go. Let's get to it.
Let's get to it. And I tell you, I cannot forgive your Indians for not beating the hated Yankees.
Don't go there. I'll start crying.
No. The Astros better beat them now. I mean, I'm hoping for the two Carlos. You know, Carlos are good. Carlos
Beltran.
And Carlos Correa.
Yeah, they had a 3-0 lead.
Yeah,
so they had a 3-0 lead, and I just turned the TV off. So, yeah.
I hope they can finish them today so this is over, this saga of the Yankees going forward. No, it can't be. Anyway,
well,
we have like
seven. This is a seven game, so they got to win four. So this would just be three tonight, right?
Yeah.
They're 2-0.
Yeah, well, they finish it in Houston next time, so it's okay. No problem.
There you go.
But,
okay.
Hey, you said it. We have a lot of golf to talk about, international golf. And, I don't think they should play in the States during this time because everybody will be either college football or NFL, so there's no way they can compete. But you said it. There's a lot of action that happened this past weekend also, and you have the recap of the PGA Tour and what happened at the CIMB Classic.
Well, for Pat Perez, life does indeed begin after 40. He prevailed over in Malaysia. You know, he's one of those guys that has had a solid career on the PGA Tour. He's made 250 cuts. He's earned over $22 million, Carlos. He would pop up on leaderboards a couple times every year. But lately, since returning from an injury, he's been a new and improved Pat Perez. I don't know if it's a time off rehabbing made him appreciate the game more or understand his time was growing short and he needed to get it in gear if he wanted to leave his mark on the game. But for whatever reason, he has been on fire over the past 2 years. Perez joined the tour in 1997, didn't win until 2009, so that's like 12 years at the Bob Hope Classic. Then he didn't win again for 7 years until last fall, 2016, at the OHL Classic in Mayakoba. And here he is again the very next year, winning in Malaysia. In 2016, before this all started, he missed 8 cuts in just 11 starts, didn't play after February. That's when he had the shoulder surgery. He was off for pretty much the rest of the year. Last year was a completely different story. And along with the win in Mexico, he posted 6 top 10s, earned $4.3 million. Now he starts 2018 out with a win and over $1 million earnings. He could have a monster year. And he's playing with so much confidence now. I mean, he could become a factor in the majors and the really big tournaments. So, you know, another thing that popped up, you know, we've been seeing his name a little bit more the last couple months. Does this runner-up finish signal a resurgence for Keegan Bradley? He and his wife are expecting their first child soon. Keegan said of Chasing Perez, "For the last 2 days, every time I made a birdie, he did too. I played really well this weekend." Bradley's runner-up at the CIMB was his best result since the runner-up to 2014 Arnold Palmer Invitational presented by MasterCard. You know, and this is a former President's Cup, Ryder Cup player, you know, big-time stuff, one of Phil's buddies. You know, this going from the anchored putting thing really threw him for a loop. It's probably affected him more than just about anybody else other than Tim, the little guy from Australia. But
Tim Clark.
So maybe he's got things under control now with the on an anchored putting stroke. Xander Schauffele, here's a guy you like. I know that you like this guy. He is really showing us something. Another strong finish. His heritage is a mixed bag. He's born in California. His father is half French, half German, and his mother is Taiwanese. But he grew up in Japan. He admitted he's never really traveled outside the U.S. and was looking forward to the PGA Tour's three-week Asian swing, which continues this week with the CJ Cup at Nine Bridges in South Korea, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. Schauffele did finish a tie for third behind Perez and Bradley last week in Malaysia. A couple of the names, Hideki Matsuyama, another guy I know you like, tied for fifth. Paul Casey had a T7. He just keeps making those top tens. And Peter Uihlein, who just earned his PGA Tour card via the Web.com Tour, collected his first top 10. So congratulations to him. So just a couple of notes to wrap up the CIMB Classic, Carlos. Perez hit over 86% of the greens in regulation, and he tied for first with Hideki, who also had the same number. Perez also ranked T13 in driving accuracy and T9 in putts. So nothing outstanding, but just solid in all areas. Wee Kim aced the 208-yard par 3 15th in the third round to win a BMW 740 LE X-Drive. It marked the fourth straight year in which a player has made an ace at the CIMB. And then Justin Thomas was playing also. It was his eighth event in 10 weeks. The stifling heat and humidity in Malaysia did take a toll. He admitted he was already a little tired when he got to Malaysia. You know, perhaps predictably, he never got much going. And he did shoot a 566 in the final round after he kind of got acclimated. But he finished at T17 at 11 under par. This is too much golf for him, Carlos. I know he's a young guy. He's going to be playing. I'm not sure if he's playing this week in Korea. I forgot about that.
Yes, he is.
You know he's going to be playing in the WGC. That's mm-hmm. 2 more weeks. So that's 11 out of 12 weeks. That for anybody, and that's traveling around the world. That's too much. He's going to get hurt. He needs to take some time off. You heard it here first. That's all I have to say about CIMB, Carlos.
I just hope that Justin. I mean, I understand he had to go there because he was looking. He was the two-time defending champion, so he was looking for 3 straight victories in this tournament. But he didn't manage that three-peat, and I believe that's why he's there. Plus, he's going to be there for the WGC. So,
His people should not have let him go, and he should not be playing in the CJ. He should have just gone over and played in the WGC and gone home. There's no way he should
have played. I'm worried that he could go in a burnout like it happened to Jordan Spieth, that he was like for a year and a half out of the same.
We've seen so many guys do this. I can go back to the 70s, Carlos. Billy Rogers, you know, these guys win majors and stuff, and then their managers book them on all these tournaments where they pay appearance fees or give them clinics or something to pay them big money to come and travel around the world. And it sounds great, but it just burns them out. And the next year, they're not worth it. They just don't have any. They don't care because they're burnt out. They're too tired, and then they get an injury, and then that nags along. I've seen it happen for 40 years, Carlos. It's too much. He should not be playing this much.
He should not, definitely. I totally agree. And just to round up what this recap on the CIMB Classic, Hideki Matsuyama, he looked back to his best. That third round of 63, I thought he was going to have a chance, but he couldn't find that same spark on Sunday. He closed with a 71 and then finished tied for fifth there. Another player that I like to mention, and I like him also how he's playing. He's been playing very strong on the run of form there on the PGA Tour, and that is Paul Casey. I mean, since the U.S. Open in June, has played 9 events, and he has only finished outside of the top 15 once. Only once.
Yeah.
I mean, his tied for 7th place finishing this event could have been much better had it not been for that tour first round of 77. But he played the final 3 rounds in 19 under par. I mean, Paul Casey is really on a strong run of form. And for Pat Perez, man, he is now a winner again and has climbed to 2nd place on the extremely early FedEx Cup standings. But I just have to say for people like me, you know, that are a little bit on the pounds, right? On a tour that is right, with size 30 waists, PR conscious handlers, and TrackMan perfected swings, Perez is unapologetically himself, okay? Now, with 2 wins in the past 11 months, or double his previous win total over 15 years, his lesson for all future pros, do you, okay? Do you. So that's what Pat Perez is all about. So we have hope. Doesn't have to be 30 size waist there. Anyway.
You know, Carlos, before you get away with that, let me, you know, Pat Perez is somebody that when he was young, 2 things. He had a tremendous temper, okay?
Yeah.
For a long time. And then the second thing was he liked to have a good time. I mean, he was one of John Daly's good buddies. They hung out after rounds and they would, you know, party all night and all this stuff. And that really hurt him. You know, imagine, I mean, he grew up beating Tiger Woods. He and Tiger, you know, were the top amateurs back in the day, okay? In California. And so he wasn't afraid of Tiger. He had beaten him when he was younger. He could have beat him. But he kind of beat himself. He was making so much money. He didn't, you know, he didn't have to put in the extra work. The wins didn't matter because he was making so much money. But now I think as he's gotten older, he's realized, you know, now's the time. I need to do this now. And, you know, his talent shows through. The guy's obviously very talented.
No, that's a great point. I mean, remember, I've forgotten about that. He was the guy before with Tiger, so who knows what could have been of his career had he just gone the right way. You know, maybe we would have been talking about Pat Perez instead of Tiger Woods, but hey, that's how life is. So now let's talk a little bit about the LPGA. The ladies were playing in South Korea, where they can have 2 teams and compete for the World Championship. That's how many they have there, and they're good. But then another one, Jin Young Ko, who is playing on the KLPGA Tour, won the LPGA KEB Hana Bank Championship in Incheon on Sunday.
Lydia Ko?
Jin Young Ko.
Is it a different Ko?
It's a different
There's
Ko.
More Ko's
really.
And there's more South Koreans. And I mean, pretty soon, who's going to beat these women? Who are going to beat these South Koreans? Man, they just keep coming.
I don't know. You know that. The KLPGA Tour has the money. Maybe they'll become the LPGA Tour. I don't know, because they have the we'll talk a little bit about that later. But anyway, yeah, I have something later on that. But she earned a berth on the LPGA Tour, and she held off world number 2 and countryman and surefire rookie of the year, Sungyeon Park, to clinch her first LPGA Tour victory by 2 shots. Ko, and yes, Jin Young Ko, no Lydia Ko, started the day with a 2-stroke lead, but she got her her final round off to a poor start. She bogeyed 2 of the first 3 holes to drop 2 behind Park. Before then, she started sinking birdies to fire a 4-under par 68 on the ocean course there at the Sky 72 Golf and Resort. The 22-year-old Cope picked up five shots in an eight-hole stretch from the fifth before posting a tournament record 19 under total for 269 in near-perfect conditions. You know, Cope may be a stranger, and I'm, again, it's not Lydia Ko, to this side of the world, but she boasts nine wins on the Korean LPGA Tour. And this becomes now her 10th career title since she turned professional in 2014. The win earned her $300,000 in prize money. Cole now has the option of participating on the LPGA Tour events for the remainder of this season and next season. But then she said after the tournament that she will make a decision about playing on the LPGA Tour after she discussed it with her parents. But she will be focusing right now on the KLPGA Tour until this season ends. Sungyeon Park had to settle for second place after closing with a 68. And after playing a flawless golf over the first 13 holes with four birdies, a three-putt at the 14th effectively halted her bid. Another South Korean, In-gee Shan, finishing third after carding a final round of 69. She now has risen to number four in the world ranking. So three Koreans got the top three spots. There, rounding out the top 10 were Americans Lisette Salas and Marina Alex, who finished in solo fourth and fifth, respectively. Charlie Hall and Minjae Lee, T6. Defending champion Carlota Siganda with a final round of 72 completed an impressive but unsuccessful title defense by tying for eight with Brooke Henderson and American Angel Jin. Christy Kerr, solos 12. Susan Peterson at T14. Lydia Ko, there you have it, Lydia Ko, T19. Michelle Wee making her return to competition, finished T23 alongside Jessica Korda and Hyo-Yu Kim. Lexi Thompson was at T26. Arya Yutanaren, man, it seems like ages since we have seen her being on the top of the leaderboard. She finished tied for 33rd alongside Haru Nomura. Anna Norquist, Se-Yeon Kim, and Karini Kerr were T43. Sean Chan Fong was T46. Daniel Kang and Madeline Sackstrom, other two from the Solheim Cup, T66. And Fred I.K. Kim withdrew after an opening round of 75. Don't know the illness or whatever happened to her, but one good thing to know is that she'll be in action this week. So whatever it was, it seems like hopefully it's not too bad because she's having a great season, Fred.
Yeah, you know, you talk about these South Korean women, you know, a fact that gets overlooked quite a bit is, you know, Lydia Ko is, officially a Kiwi from New Zealand, but she was born in South Korea, and her parents moved to New Zealand when she was, four or five or something. And so,
Minjae Lee is from there, but she's Australian, so there you have two more.
The Olympics should let them have like two, three teams whenever they play. they could get the gold, silver, and bronze, all three. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the old guys. Colin Montgomery appears to be in pretty good form entering the Charles Schwab Cup playoffs this week, as he won the SAS championship, although he was sidelined for 2 months early in the year with torn ligaments in his ankle. He's won twice in the past 5 weeks and may be peaking at just the right time. Monty only made two bogeys for the whole tournament, 54 holes, and began the final round tied with Philip Price and Jerry Kelly. He carded three birdies on the front nine and added five more on the back. He finished with an 8-under par 64, good enough for a three-shot win over Doug Garwood, the defending champion, and Vijay Singh. Corey Pavin was one more stroke back for fourth. Bernard Langer shot 69 to finish tied for 11th, way down the list for him. Pushed his season earnings over $3 million for the third time in the last four seasons. The 60-year-old German star leads the Charles Schwab Cup standings by only $600,000 over second place Scotty McCarron. The SAS Championship was the final regular season event on the Champions Tour. In addition to Colin Montgomery winning the tournament, we had a few guys who were trying to play their way into the top 72 so they could get into the playoffs. And it didn't happen. The standings remained virtually unchanged after the end of play on Sunday. The bubble boy, Bart Bryant, was at number 72. Well, he did move up to number 69, but all the guys below him just moved down one, Skip Kendall, Jim Carter, and Russ Cochran, so they all stayed qualified for the playoffs. Jose Maria Olazabal, Marco Mira, Gary Hallberg, and Ian Woosnam were left on the outside looking in. We're going to preview the Charles Schwab Cup playoffs in the practice range a little later in the show tonight, so don't go away. You're going to want to hear that. We're going to break the playoffs down for you. So, Carlos, that's all I've got to say about the Champions Tour, and I think you're going to talk a little bit about Tyrell Hatton won again in Italy.
You know, I remember the late Stuart Scott when he says he was en fuego. Yeah. Tyrell Hatton is en fuego. Yeah. He's on fire. I mean,
he's in fuego.
He fired a superb final round of 65 to win the Italian Open at the Golf Club Milano. I'm sorry. The victory means back-to-back European wins for an Englishman who also triumphed, as we reported last week, in the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship in Scotland last week. Hatton, he began the final round at the Golf Club Milano two shots adrift of 54-hole leader Matt Wallace of England. And he started steadily, but just one under for his round through nine holes. He looked unlikely to secure a second straight European Tour title. But the 26-year-old, who had celebrated a birthday on Saturday, found another gear on the run for home. He made four straight birdies from the 12th, and he went on to the 18th tee tied at the top of the leaderboard with Kiradej Afi-Barnred and Ross Fisher, who had set the clubhouse target at 20 under par after a superb closing 63. A playoff was looking the most likely 72-hole outcome at that stage. But, you know, Tyrell, he had another ideas. He played a good approach to the home hole and left himself a 15-foot putt for the birdie and the title. He calmly rolled it home, and the second consecutive European Tour title was his. You know, he has won over 1.5 million euros in his last two events alone. In winning back-to-back, he now has climbed to fifth place on the Race to Dubai rankings. He's now well in front on the European Ryder Cup points list, and he moved already into the top 20 of the official World Golf rankings. You know, he had a really rocky spell in the middle of the season, but he has been tremendous form through the late summer and early autumn. I mean, his last four finishes have been T3rd, T8, first and first. He's really in a hot streak, and he might be a force to be reckoned with in the Race to Dubai finals. Another mention that is worth mentioning is Ross Fisher. I mean, it's underlined because of the wins by Tyrell Hatton, but it was another good week for him. Ross Fisher, if you don't know, has been the runner up to title for 2 weeks in a row. So if it wouldn't have been for Tyrell Hatton, he might have been the back-to-back winner. He's also going well into the Race to Dubai. He's now fourth, and he should move up into the top 35 of the official World Golf rankings. I didn't check, but he should be there. Matt Wallace led the tournament through 54 holes, and he coped well with the pressure to close with a 69 and finish in solo fourth place. You know, going into the week, he was outside the top 100, which is important there in the Race to Dubai standings, but by picking up nearly 300,000 euros for his efforts in Monza, he's now 62nd. So you must remember that the top 60 earn a place in the season-ending DP World Tour Championship. So he's just two away from making it there. Rounding out the top 10 were Marcus Fraser in solo fifth, Race to Dubai leader Tommy Fleetwood. He tied for sixth with Francesco Molinari, who's currently eighth on that race, George Coetzee and David Horsey. Golf's most interesting man, Miguel Angel Jimenez, he tied for 10th with Nino Bertasio, Eddie Pepperell, Mark Warren, and Mike Lorenzo Vera. Other notable finishes, John Rahm, who's number 3 in the race, and Matthew Fitzpatrick, who's number 14th, were among the group that tied for 15th. Number 19 in the race, Jordan Smith, he finished T21. Number 12 and number 15, Paul Dunn and Alexander Levy were among the ones tied for 26th. The number two in the race, Sergio Garcia, he finished T30. The number seven, who is Alex Noren, he finished T38. Number 11, Bernd Wiesberger, he finished T45. So as you see, a lot of the players that are there on the top of the Race to Dubai were playing here, looking for better positioning. And among those who missed the cut were Andrew Beef Johnston, Shane Lowry, Andy Sullivan, Eduardo Molinari, Martin Keimer, Paddy Harrington, Hideto Tanihara, and Danny Willett, who keeps Fred, I don't know what's wrong with him, he keeps just sliding and sliding down.
I'm going to talk about him a little bit, Carlos. Really interesting stuff here we're going to talk about here in just a little while. So I have an answer for you, but just not yet. I'm going to make you wait.
Okay.
The teaser.
I just set it up for you.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about the U.S. Mid-Am Championship. It was held last week. Matt Parziali is a fireman from Massachusetts. He tried his hand at professional golf after a successful collegiate career at Florida Southeastern. But three unsuccessful attempts at Q school left him needing to find a real job. He followed in his father and grandfather's footsteps, took the fireman's test, and sought his amateur reinstatement. Now, he's one of the best amateur golfers in the country. Parziali booked his spot last week in the U.S. Open and probably the 2018 Masters by winning one of the USGA's biggest prizes, U.S. Mid-Am Championship at Capital City Golf Club near Atlanta. He's about to embark on a dreamlike season. His 2018 schedule will not only include the U.S. Open, but probably the Masters, as I mentioned. He's exempt into the next two U.S. amateurs. And that amateur is going to be at Pebble Beach. So he's going to get to play Pebble and probably Augusta National and Shinnecock all in the same year. Wow. Wow. What a deal. Parziali easily defeated Josh Nichols of North Carolina, 8-6 in the 36-hole championship back. He made 10 birdies in just 30 holes. So poor Josh really didn't even have a chance there, but great playing for him. But Carlos, there's a little more to this story. You know, here we have a regular guy, a fireman. He's able to travel and get in enough practice to compete with the financial planners and country club types in one of the USGA's biggest championships and earn his trip to the Masters and the U.S. Open and all that good stuff. But, you know, just like Paul Harvey, we're going to give you the rest of the story. The Amateur Golf Alliance was started a few years ago and has been doing a lot of great work for amateur golfers behind the scenes. Nobody's really seen it as of yet. The AGA is responsible for starting the Concession Cup that is hosted every 2 years and features mid-ams and senior amateurs from Great Britain and Ireland and the U.S. competing in a team competition, like a Ryder Cup or a Walker Cup kind of thing. They've held it the first few times at the Concession Club down in Florida, but this next time it's going to be competed overseas. They're also working to hold an East-West amateur team competition in the United States and also add a stroke play event for amateurs in the near future as well. So they're really working, doing a lot of good stuff, and they're working on a lot of the stuff that I can't talk about just yet, but we're going to keep giving you updates on this as we go along. But what I really want to talk about tonight is that the American Amateur Golf Alliance has also made a commitment to amateur golf to provide funding for deserving players that need help to compete in bigger amateur events around the country so they get in enough competitive reps to be ready to contend in the big events like U.S. Amateur and the U.S. Mid-Amateur. Chandler Phillips from Texas A&M was the first young man the AGA helped with funding to be able to play in enough events to get qualified for the Walker Cup. Phillips did not have the financial resources to compete in amateur events and would have been spending the summer earning lunch money by caddying. After the AGA received a schedule and budget from Phillips, plus following all NCAA and USGA regulations, provided funding via the Texas Golf Association to offset his travel. The AGA allowed Phillips to take maximum advantage of the opportunities last summer by finishing T6th at the Northeast Amateur and 4th in the Trans-Mississippi Amateur. So it's really the first one worked out so well. And guess what? The second golfer under the AGA program was Matt Parziale. So they helped him gain entry into a couple large amateur events that helped him compete and be ready to win at the highest level. You know, Carlos, we all watch the U.S. Amateur, and these are primarily the college kids that will be starring on the PGA Tour. The mid-ams are over 25 years old, guys that have tried to probably make it in professional golf and for whatever reason just weren't quite successful enough, but still love the game and want to continue to compete. The AGA has a pretty good record of success helping young golfers thus far and will expand their mission of helping more deserving amateurs in the future. We're going to have more about this, as I mentioned, in future shows. Matter of fact, Matt is going to – we're going to tape an interview in the morning that we will play either next week or the week after, whenever we have time to plug it in, talking about his experience with the AGA and how they have helped him reach the level of success that he has. And we're also – I'm going to get some information from him, and we're going to do a little more in-depth article in the November issue of the Ohio Golf Journal, which will be out, of course, right after the first of the month. So the Amateur Golf Association has been very quiet with what they're doing, but they've kind of realized that what they're doing is too important. They need to get the word out a little bit. And happily, they've chosen our show to start that ball rolling, and we're going to do our best to try to let people know a little bit about Carlos.
We're definitely going to back that up. And as you all know, I mean, ever since Fred and I started here, this show, we have been all for anything that is to promote the golf and to grow the game, really. And these are the initiatives that really gets golf going. I mean, it's not only, I've always said it's not only about the youngsters. There's this mid-amateurs, like you said, they already passed that initial prime to try to make it. So there's interest for them to try to keep going to that next level, and this is a way of doing it. And, wow, I mean, we're all for it. So definitely any other news that we get, and we're going to be keeping you posted on it. So keep it with us. We're going to be your source for anything amateur that is going to be happening around. With that, we're going to wrap up our week in backswing. Now we're going to move to our four call or quick previews of this weekend's action. And Fred, the inaugural CJ Cup at Nine Bridges is going to be held there in Jeju Island in South Korea. So tell us all about that.
How did you come up with a name like that? The CJ Cup Jeju at Nine Bridges.
Well, yeah, I can tell you. I'll tell you a little bit about that later if you don't say it on your preview. So I have the reason
why. Okay. Well, this is the third event of the 2018 season already. It's going to be held in Korea, and the CJ Cup is a 72-hole stroke play, made up predominantly of PGA Tour players, with additional competitors coming from a variety of Korean PGA and Asian Tour exemptions to complete the 78-player field. The tournament will be held at the Nine Bridges Golf Course on Jeju Island and is the first official FedEx Cup event in South Korea, with PGA Tour members receiving official FedEx Cup points. They did have the, the President's Cup or whatever there a couple years ago or whatever they had over there.
Yeah, the President's Cup. Yep.
But this is the first, FedEx Cup tournament that they've had there. Pretty strong field. Justin Thomas. I had it in my notes. It just slipped my mind. But Justin Thomas is playing again. We've got Jason Day, Paul Casey, Adam Scott, Siwoo Kim, Xander Schauffele. There's a guy that's playing a lot. I know he's young, but, man, you better bring it back a little bit. Thomas Peters, Patrick Reed, Daniel Berger, and Pat Perez. So a pretty strong field. And that's just the American guys. You look at, then we got, also we got Mark Leishman, Charles Schwartzel, Brandon Grace, Johnny Vegas, Emilio Grillo, and Adam Hadwin. So they're playing for $9.25 million, which is a really nice purse, with $1.6 going to the winner. Golf Channel is going to air it. And because of the time difference, it begins on Wednesday night. Don't wait till Thursday. It starts Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. So take a nap after work, and you can stay up and watch it. It will be, you know, it's the same time pretty much every day. And then it is rebroadcast from 2 to 6 a.m. and then again in the evening, 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. Yeah, if you want to check that out, it's the CJ Cup at Nine Bridges. And you said you had some more information, Carlos?
Yeah, just a couple more notes that I have here. And you mentioned about the purse is the largest behind the Players Championship, the majors, and the WGC. So they're really going out for this one, all out in the first year of the tournament. Hideki Matsuyama is going to be there as well. So another of the top players there. I have to tell you that the CJ Cup at Nine Bridges, the reason for this is because the club, like they call them at Nine Bridges, is because it has eight bridges. They connect all the different holes, every two holes, and that's what would make it 18, 17. But the ninth bridge is like a metaphorical link from the clubs to members and their guests, and that's why they call it Nine Bridges. It's the eight that are on the course, plus the nine that is symbolical for the members and their guests.
There you go.
So there you have it.
There
and
you
also,
go.
One more thing that I have in the notes. we have everything for you. We find out. And
we got it all. We cover everything.
Yeah, and another thing that you have to be noticing is that a lot of the players will be trying to get a hole-in-one here if on the 13th hole. The first player that makes a hole-in-one on the 13th hole will win a private Korean food party. Bibigo will provide its chefs to the destination of the player's choosing. Okay, the price is valued at $50,000. So I bet all the players are going to go to the 13th hole and try to ace that hole. It's going to be...
That's right, better than a car.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be trying to see who wins that Korean food party by Bibigo. So more information there for you on there.
I don't know, Carlos. That BMW looks pretty nice to me. I like the Beamer. They're worth about 100-some grand, right?
Hey, that's a good food. I mean, I can get a lot of people. I can think about a lot of things I can do with that private food party. Yeah, I just think about food. That's not good. Anyway.
I'm with you.
Back to golf. Okay, on the European Tour, the Andalucía Valderrama Masters is hosted by the Sergio García Foundation. It's going to be played at the Real Club Valderramín in Soto Grande, Spain, with a purse of 2 million euros. The defending champion is Andrew Beef Johnston, who won his first European Tour last year at Valderrama when the tournament was the Spanish Open. The Andalucía Valderrama Masters was last held in 2011, and it was won by Sergio García. Paddy Harrington is playing in Spain for the first time in 9 years. John Rahm is playing for the second straight week on the European Tour. Next week at the HSBC Champions will be his 12th counting event of the year, and he's third right now in the race to Dubai behind Fleetwood and Garcia. So that's why it's important for him to play this week and next week on the HSBC Champions. Valderrama was the site, as you might remember, of the 1997 Ryder Cup with Seve Ballesteros as the winning captain and World Golf Championships won in 1999 by Tiger Woods and in 2000 by Mike Weir. The next four European Tour events have an average prize fund of just over $8 million. So it's starting to get down to the nitty-gritty and the finals of the race to Dubai. The television coverage would be Thursday and Friday from 6 a.m. 6 a.m. to 8 a.m., then from 9:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. on Golf Channel. Saturday, you will have from 8 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., also on Golf Channel. And on Sunday, it'll be from 7 a.m. until noon on Golf Channel, Fred.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit more about the ladies. They're in Taiwan this week for the Swinging Skirts LPGA Taiwan. Both world number one So Young Yu and number two Sun Young Park headline the 81-player field for the 29th event on the 2017 LPGA Tour schedule. Defending champion Hana Yang plus past champions Lydia Ko, Yanni Tseng, and Shanshan Fang, Yi Young Hee, Stacey Lewis, Azahun Yamaros, and Amy Yang. I guess they were runners up the last ones there. There are 15 players that competed in the Solheim Cup. Daniel Kang, Chrissy Kerr, Brittany Lang, Stacey Lewis, Brittany Lichcombe, Lizette Salas, Michelle Wee, and Angel Yin from the U.S. And from Europe, you've got Carlotta Segonda, Charlie Hall, Karina Shea, Caroline Masson, Anna Nordqvist, Madeline Sagstrom, and Jody Yuard-Sada. So pretty good field in Taiwan for these Swinging Skirts. There are 9 LPGA Tour rookies in the field. Aditi Ashok, Nicole Broke-Larsen, Pei-Yun Shan, Laura Gonzalez-Escayon, Nelly Korda, Olafia Kristen Dotter, Sun Young Park, as well as Sagstrom and Yin. You can watch the LPGA. Again, we're clear over in Asia, so it starts the day early. So it starts Wednesday night. It's on 12:30 to 5. Pretty much that's the schedule all week. Well, I'm sorry, it's 12:30 to 5 on Wednesday night, but then it's 12:30, 2:30 every other day. That would be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, over into Sunday morning. So if you want to watch that, you're going to have to stay up a little bit later, Carlos.
That's right. That's right. And you have something also on the LPGA Q School to talk to us about?
Oh, I do. Yes, I'm sorry. I'm so used to going back and forth here. I do. And I have a big and sign here in my notes, but I completely overlooked it. we've got the Stage 2 of the LPGA Tour Q School is going on this week. There are 3 stages. This is the intermediate stage. You've got number one ranked amateur Leanna McGuire and Solheim Cup star Georgia Hall that will headline the field of nearly 200 golfers. It's going to be held at the Plantation Golf and Country Club in Venice, Florida. They will compete Thursday through Sunday on both the Bobcat and Panther courses, and they're looking to advance to final stage where 20 players will earn full cards for next year. The low 80 and ties following the final round will advance to that. The field, as I mentioned, Leanna McGuire, she captured the Annika Award last year, which for the top college player in the country for the second time in 3 years, actually. She's a senior at Duke and has won 7 times during her college career. Number 7 ranked amateur in the world, Cheyenne Knight, is also competing. She's a junior at Alabama. As I mentioned, Georgia Hall, which we're pretty much sure she's going to be a star. She's somebody to watch. She's currently number 38 in the world and third on the Ladies European Tour Order of Merit. The second highest ranked player in the field is Fumika Kawagishi of Japan, who ranks number 44 in the world ranking. There are 90 players that come in from stage one. There's 24 amateurs in the field. 35 countries from around the world are represented. The youngest 2 players in the field are Yunin Shun from Florida and Lee Jong-Shong of South Korea. Both are 17. The oldest player in the field is Vicky Lang of Scotland, who's 36, Carlos. So, as I mentioned, the LPGA Tour Q School and the Champions Tour are only things being played on American soil this week.
Yeah, just one note, a couple of notes. Just if you wonder how record-breaking has been Sung Yung Park as a rookie, She has more points in the Rookie of the Year race than the combined points of the next three players behind her. Just a little note on how Sungyeom Park has done. And about Leona Maguire, got to update the seven wins. She has nine. And her college peers must be counting down. I think they have this countdown until she graduates and leaves.
Because yeah, whatever.
She won her 8th and 9th career title as her Duke's women's golf team swept both the team and the individuals Ruth Chris Tar Heel Invitational titles in record fashion. I mean, she turned in a tournament record 12 under par, 204 with rounds of 66, 69, and 69 there. As the Blue Devils shot the second lowest 54-hole ledger in school history, and she was the big part of it. So I think that her college peers can't wait for her to be out of it. So
I got to have a really nice chat with her mother in July here at the Marathon Classic. It was so hot out on the range, and I was taking some pictures and watching some of the women hit balls, and there was a bench there, and there was ladies sitting, so I went over and sat down on the bench for a little bit just to rest and cool off, and I struck up a conversation, and it was Leona's mother, who was over here from Ireland, and just visiting, you know, for the summer. She's a school teacher. She and her husband both work in Ireland, and I think he's a superintendent, and the mother is a teacher. They're both in education over there. And she was spending the summer traveling around with them, just had a wonderful chat with her, and a really well-grounded person, really, really good stuff, Carlos.
Oh, definitely. And you might remember last year that during round two of the LPGA Q School, really where they were, during the second round, so to remain with the Blue Devils. So that tells you also about that background that you're saying, because she was valuing more the school education than just going to the LPGA, and that was something that we mentioned last year for Leona. But she's the real deal, and once she hits the pros and gets used to it, watch out. She's going to be another one like Georgia Hall that you don't know from there from Europe, but this one has been here in college playing for Duke, but you will listen a lot from Leona Maguire in the near future. And with that, we wrap up our four call. Now let's go to the Par 5 news. And Fred, wow, Tiger goes back to back. I mean, Pat Perez won, right? And now we have Tiger Woods back to back, number one on the Par 5 news with us. Yeah. What's going on? What are we talking about?
You know, what did we do for 2 years or 2.5 years? We had Tiger as number one in the Par 5 news pretty much every week, right? And the last two weeks, we've got him right at the top again. But before I go there, Carlos, I want to mention OhioGolfJournal.com has the best golf news. We try and cover a diverse variety of golf stories. We do equipment reviews. We do travel reviews. We have opinion, information, history. This last month, we have the backstory on the restoration of Inverness Club here in Toledo as they try and get ready for the 2019 U.S. Junior Amateur and then the 2021 Solheim Cup. And hopefully we'll grab another major U.S. Open or a PGA Championship down the road. So that's all in OhioGolfJournal.com. And also, if our listeners get a chance and they have access to Roku, they can catch us there on Back 9 Report TV with the number 9, Back 9 Report TV on Roku. Yeah, Carlos, Tiger is back in the news. He continues to exhibit progress as he took part in a clinic in California last week. Hit some iron shots for the fans at his TW Invitational last Wednesday at Monterey Country Club. Plus, he posted a video of full swings with a driver on Twitter wearing what else? The red shirt on Sunday. Woods seems to be pleased with his progress in his latest rehabilitation from back surgery. He's taken more time to heal this time, and evidently has been listening to his medical advisors. This is the second video he has posted over the last couple of weeks of his swing. This time he is swinging a driver, and although it is a complete swing, it does not appear to be at like 100% effort. You're not trying to hit a 350-yarder here. There is just a little over 2 months remaining before the first of the year. Carlos, I ask you, could it be possible that we're going to see Tiger Woods in Dubai or maybe Abu Dhabi and then maybe in California? And if that's so, what will Tiger's return mean to golf at this point?
Well, before I tell you that, I have a question for you. I'm going to swing this one back to you, and it's because you are the teaching pro, okay? And I saw that video, and I'm not a swing guru, but when you see that tweet and you see the comments, one of his former coaches, Hank Haney, replied to that tweet saying that that's a swing he could win with. It's not across the line and stuck inside coming down. A little stiff looking, but it's good enough. Man, I don't know. I mean, it's a significant step, but calling it a good swing to me. What was your opinion about that swing? I mean, obviously, like you said, he wasn't trying to hit it 300 yards. It's just to show that he's capable of hitting a full swing with the driver. I mean, after the minute that I saw him in the first video hitting full four irons, my immediate thought was that that must mean driver isn't far away. But what was your take on the video and his swing, you that are a teaching pro on this?
You hit it right on the head. It has no value. He's just simply swinging the club right now just to get to a finish, make a backswing and a follow-through. That's all he's trying to do right now. He really doesn't care, I don't think, if it's going left, right, sideways, whatever. He's just trying to make sure that his back doesn't yank up and put him on the ground like it has done in the past. To say that that's a swing he could win with, that's literally stupid. Hank Haney, I think, is just trying to make some points for writing the book and slamming Tiger. I mean, I that was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen in my life, that Hank Haney was quoted as saying that. That's simply just brown nosing, you know. Where Tiger's at right now, he hasn't played since February or something like that, and then that
February well in back the Dubai District Classic. Yes.
Yeah. So you just don't pick it back up and start swinging it good. And then even when you're on the range and you think you're swinging it good, and you go out and you got to post a number, that ball starts going everywhere, okay? So to say he could win with that swing, that was absolutely ludicrous, Carlos.
Yeah, to me, I mean, it's a significant step, but clearance to resume full golf activities and playing in the PGA Tour golf, like you're saying, there's just two separate things. I mean, of course, people have started to speculate about the Hero World Challenge. That's a small event with only 18 of the best players in the world. And since he hosted and hosts it and it benefits his foundation, people are speculating he's going to get back on it. But it's also about a month and a half away on the schedule. You know. And the other thing
that
is
would
that
be.
Because, yeah, but there's still two spots in the field that are available. They have been, to me, left open conspicuously, you know, just to try to attract more attention to it. But Steinberg, Mark Steinberg, his agent, said that they haven't even discussed that yet. To me, if he hasn't changed, to me, he's thinking about the 2018 majors and how he needs to get in golf shape and how he needs to hit the ball a certain way, yada, yada, you know. But I'm not holding my breath on that. Even if you set aside the multiple physical woes that he's been dealing with, my main concern is his mental side of the game. And Tiger hasn't been healthy for some time now, and you might remember Seve once said it, and Arnie said it too, that once you lose the edge, you know, I wonder if Tiger is willing to put himself out there if he's not convinced that he has a chance to win. He really no longer sounds convinced about that every time that you hear him. It's just not listening to the same Tiger as before, like I'm going to own the world. And I can understand he's going through a lot of things and maybe trying to get back into that psyche, but I don't see him mentally where he needs to be. But on your other question as to what does this mean for golf, this is big for golf. Even that the fact that we're having him again and having this extended talk about him, it tells you how big it has been in social media, which is a bit of a measurement as to how people are taking this, because he just posted a video of making that, I'm not going to call it any words, but that swing. That swing.
Yeah.
And everybody goes berserk. It was a flurry of social media updates, trying to say when he's going to be playing. And even I was seeing Paddy Power, who's a UK betting outlet. They are capitalizing on that rampant speculation by posting odds on various outcomes tied to win as yet undetermined return to competition. I'm going to read some of them to you, and it's ridiculous. All the people are betting already. No other player in the world, I mean, put all of them together, they won't get this attention. I'm going to tell you this, and with this one I'll close it and swing it back to you, but I'm going to tell you one. Make a PGA Tour cut again, 1/6. Make the cut in a major again, 2/5. Play the 2018 Masters, 4/9. Hit the fairway with his first tee shot back, ridiculous, 4/6. Miss the cut in his first event back, 8/11. Make the cut in his first event back, even. Get back in the OW in the official World Golf Rankings top 50. He's currently number 1164. That's 6/4. That he will officially retire from golf by the end of 2018, 7/4. Get back on the official World Golf Rankings top 10. That's 10/1. Win another major, 10/1. Rehire caddy Stevie Williams, 12/1. Play in the 2018 Ryder Cup. that was good. Play in the 2018 Ryder Cup, 12/1.
I love it.
Win on the PGA Tour next year, 16/1. Win a major next year, 25/1. Hear this one. Rehire swing coach Butch Hartman, 33/1. Make the 2020 U.S. Olympic team. They're even betting on the 2020.
Oh, my God.
Win the next PGA Tour event, 51, and get back to world number one ranking, 50/1. Fred, I mean, this is...
That not going to happen, Carlos. There are no sure things in life.
I wouldn't say no, because that's a...
Tiger Woods will never get back to number one. It ain't going to happen.
I won't say no to that. I mean, I agree it's a long shot, but put him on the right golf course with a swing that's not going to send him back to the DL. He can win again, and you can't hide talent. He has it. It's just more mental to me than anything else, and definitely golf needs him back.
With the exception of Phil Mickelson, there is the players at the top are almost as good and talented as Tiger was. If he would have had a Jordan Spieth, a Dustin Johnson, Rory came in a little bit later, but he was young. If he would have had those guys to compete against for 10 years, he would not have won as many majors as he won. There's no way, because those guys are too good. So
if they're so good, then why they haven't replicated his success?
Well, that's the point. I mean, they're so good, they're not going to win every time. Jordan Spieth's doing the most of anybody, and over the last 3 years, he's pretty much been in every major championship. He's been in contention, and so, you know, he would have won another one. Then he blew the Masters a couple of years ago. Just completely fell apart. But you know, Rory did the same thing. So it's not easy to do. But those guys are putting themselves in that position time and time again. And as they age just a little bit more, they're going to win in more regularity as long as injuries don't pop up. But Tiger did not have the level of competition that is right now on the PGA Tour. I will say that.
I have to disagree. You know what? I think that the problem is that right now there is nobody that has that dominance that he had before. A lot of the players have the talent. They had the talent, but they didn't have that dominant edge that he had. He has lost it already. But the thing is that back then, he had that edge, and everybody was like, I cannot play. And one thing that Tiger Woods has that no one else right now has, only, I would say, close to him, maybe Rory, Tiger Woods can hit any shot. He's not relegated to one or two shots like most of the of the players of his day.
Right.
He can hit any shot. When you can hit any shot, that was what made him so great and so different to everybody else. It didn't matter what situation he was, but plus that, add to it the mental toughness that he had, everybody knew they were playing for second. They didn't worry about, let me see if I can beat Tiger Woods, which right now everybody's beatable. They're good, but they're beatable. They don't have as many resources as Tiger had. So that's why I say they're good, yes, but I don't think they're as good as Tiger was in his prime. They won't be unless they really – Yes.
No, but I mean, Tiger would have off. He would have off weeks, and he would still win, because nobody. What I'm saying is, when he would have, if he'd have those off weeks with these guys are playing now, they would beat him, because they're that close. They're that close. So to continue this, Carlos. I mean, so golf has been very good without Tiger, okay, but not great. That's exactly to your point, okay. Except for a few great moments this year, Jordan Spieth's phenomenal win at the Open Championship was exciting. You know, we had Henrik Stenson and Phil Mickelson a year ago in the Open Championship. And then we had Dustin Johnson and Jordan Spieth in that playoff at the Northern Trust, and that was fantastic because of DJ's drive over the water in the playoff hole. Other than Sergio's win at the Masters, nothing else really measures up the last couple years. But if Tiger comes back, we'll have that kind of excitement and media attention every week. It would be huge for the sport. And right now, at the time that the PGA Tour is working to negotiate future TV contracts or whatever they're going to do, this could be a tremendous boost to the tour financial if he's out there beating it around. And I want to wrap up, too, by saying that if Tiger tries to play in the Hero World Challenge, that would be one of the dumbest things he could possibly do. I thought it was dumb last year when he played in it, and he did so bad. That was just awful. I mean, he was last by, you know, what, 10 shots or something. He wasn't even close to any kind of playing shape. And it would be even worse if he tried to do it this year. He should just play, practice, get comfortable, make sure he's healthy, and come out next year and get his experience on the golf course. I do not want to see him in the Hero World Challenge. I just do not want to see that.
Yeah, I don't think he will play there. I mean, he went on runs sometimes and that we haven't seen in years, but he got a people whipped up in frenzy there when he did it, but definitely it was dumb for him to return. I don't think he'll do it. I think he's taking it right this time. But just my final point in this before we move on. I mean, just wanted to say, Tiger, to me, the thing that, to the point that you're saying that he might not have won, I think that I have to go back again to the mental edge that he had over everybody. I don't think that a lot of the players right now, even the ones right now, because the only one that I see that competitive mental toughness is on Jordan Spieth. Anybody else, I don't see it. It's like, I don't care who's there, I'm going to go and play against him. Everybody was out. It was out. It's like, okay, I'm just not going to play. And that's why he had that mental edge that nobody else has been able to capture. And that's why everybody right now, we have all those get these good players that we have. And I can assure you there were good players before, but unfortunately it was just too much there. But anyway, whether it happens or not, we know he's not going to be the same dominant player again. It's good because, like you said, it's going to attract more attention to golf. And for the PGA Tour, they must be right now savoring this because they know that if he's just at least competitive, the rankings and the ratings are going to be across the board all the way. So, and that would boast good things for them. Hey, let's move on and talk now a little bit of a story from a friend of the show, Steve Eubanks, who reported that Mike Won was in South Korea for the KB Hennebank Championship, which is a trip that the LPGA Commission makes on an annual basis. But his thoughts were miles away. 2 months after going public with plans for the LPGA, the European Tour, and the RNA to join in helping the ailing Ladies European Tour, the commissioner told the Global Golf Post that those plans, as well-intentioned as they are, have been put on hold. He said that the Ladies European Tour feels it's most appropriate to focus on building their 2018 schedule and the numerous opportunities that have been presented in that regard. So they have postponed any further decisions regarding a proposal until after the first half of next year. If you read between the lines, the board members of the LET, a tour that is really on life support right now, stiff-armed the three organizations most capable of nursing the teetering circuit back to health. The LPGA, the RNA, and the European Tour were willing to pull their extensive resources and expertise to snatch the LET from the edge of the abyss. But, for the moment at least, the LET board has decided to chase unicorns. At the Solheim Cup in mid-August, you might remember we reported that one had said they realized there was a sense of urgency. Obviously, the LET does not feel the situation is not urgent enough. One has long advocated for strong regional tours that allow young women to hone their skills close to home. I mean, a year ago at the 2016 KB Hennebank Championship, he told the Global Post, and I quote, "If the LET asked me to help, I'd create a 20-tournament schedule, 17 of which would be played in Europe, and we'd play for $250,000 to $300,000 per event. I wouldn't go for $1 million sponsors." Now, I'm not sure if I am a LET player that I would like to hear Mike Won say that they have them paying for $250,000 to $300,000 per tournament. That doesn't sound lucrative, but it's sustainable, and it allows a girl who grew up in Denmark to stay home and play her way onto the LPGA rather than having to leave home at 17 or 18. But, you know, it's ironic that one's revelation of the suspension of talks with the LET came the same week that a member of the Korean LPGA Tour, Jin Young-ko, won the LPGA event in her homeland. No one doubts the health of the KLPGA or even the Japan LPGA, but with a little help, the LET could be right there with them. One said back in August that they have proven they can do it. They've raised the number of tournaments on the Symetra Tour from 13 to 23, and those on the LPGA from 23 to 36. In 2017, the LET will be staging only a total of 16 events. Six of them are in Europe, including the Aberdeen Asset Management Ladies Scottish Open, the Ricoh Women's British Open, the Solheim Cup, and the Evian Masters, which all are events co-sanctioned by the LPGA Tour. Take that away, and you only get 12 native events. I can understand both sides here. I mean, the LPGA right now has no competition on the Women's Tour side. The KLPGA can match at some points on the money side and obviously on the quality of their players, but not on the international reach, so they will keep being that regional type. So will the Japan one. The LET is obviously thinking, like the European Tour, that they might at some point rival the LPGA, and that is why they keep exploring these opportunities that, of course, right now everybody's like trying to throw at them. But reality is their product is not as good as the LPGA. And for them to get to that point, they need more money from sponsors. But the money will not come from them if the product does not match the reach they want or the expectations behind it. So, Fred, either they accept this and go with the help and adopt the concept of staying in Europe and becoming a region's primary developmental tour, or they will soon face the reality where their pride stood in their way and become their downfall to eventual bankruptcy and being overtaken anyway by the big organizations.
Yeah, I mean, you know, these people are just sitting out there, the Korean tour and the LPGA. They're just sitting there, just waiting. If they're going to, you know, if they're going to self-destruct, there's a void, and they will just rush in and take it over. And the other point that we tried to make, you know, a couple weeks ago when we were talking about this, the Solheim Cup has become such a big deal. You know, are they going to replace it with Korean people? With Korean women instead of the LET, then I mean, I don't know. It's been such a good deal with the LET. I don't see the LET going away. That's what I said before when they came up with this, and the RNA and the European Tour and the LPGA offered to help them. They had to keep the LET separate just to make sure that the Solheim Cup was maintained, because the Solheim Cup is a big money maker for the LET. That's what kept them going every couple of years. So I don't know. I don't know where this is all going to wash out. But for them to just kind of slap them in the face and say thanks but no thanks, that doesn't look smart to me. But we'll see. I may work on trying to get a hold of somebody to talk to that maybe knows a little bit more about that, and we'll see if we can get them on the show. I'll mark that down for something to work on in the next couple of weeks. Hey, Carlos, right. The California fires have really just been so destructive. We've seen it on our television sets. Silverado Country Club was overrun by the wildfires on Monday after the close of the Safeway Open. And then there was a celebrity tournament down the road that had a problem. So we've all seen the pictures, the tents going up in fire. All the personnel was pulled off of Silverado and out of there. They were evacuated prior to any flames, but it did leave a tremendous mess. And then also the fires affected a celebrity event that was being held at Mayakama Golf Club in nearby Santa Rosa. Barry Bonds, Brett Saberhagen, Joe Carter, Olympic speed skater Dan Jansen, as well as his wife and former L.A. Dodgers closer Eric Gagne, were forced out of not one, but two hotels as the fires raced across Northern California. The Major League stars and celebs were in the area to play in a celebrity fundraiser for former San Francisco 49er Ronnie Lott. Everyone escaped any danger except for Brett Saberhagen's golf clubs that he had to leave in the parking lot to make room for more occupants in his rental car as he tried to help as many people as he could to escape the flames. Over 3,500 homes have been damaged or destroyed. Several vineyards and wine businesses are being lost to the fires. It's that really made a mess out there, Carlos.
Wow, no, definitely that is one of so many natural events that are happening that you just brace yourself and try to, not to think and get sad about all these things. But hey, at least they got out safe, and hopefully everything will be recovered very soon. Let's move on now and talk about Justin Rose. You know, he didn't have his best year in 2016, but certainly he had a memorable one. It was capped by winning the first men's Olympic gold medal in 112 years. Rose's Rio triumph in a great duel against Henrik Stenson was one of the best tournaments of the year. The 2016 Olympic title had been a key aim for him. It was the first time golf had officially returned and been featured in the Games since 1904. Add that to his 2013 U.S. Open win and his other career accomplishments, including a European Tour Order of Merit title, and the 36-year-old had done enough in the eyes of the British Crown to earn special recognition. At Buckingham Palace last week, he was awarded with the distinction of being a member of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire, which is an MBE, which is part of the Order of the British Empire, an order of chivalry which rewards Brits for accomplishments to society outside of civil service. According to Sky Sports, Rose said, and I quote, "It's definitely an honor and something I was not expecting. It's something you are maybe hoping for after the Olympics. It is something that has really capped off the whole Olympic experience for him, for me," end of quote. Unfortunately for Rose, a back injury kept him sidelined after the Ryder Cup, and the problem flared up again at the Hero World Challenge in December, forcing him to withdraw. However, he has set his sights on a successful and healthy next year. So let's see, Fred. I mean, after collecting his honor, Rose said that it will sit in a pride of place with his other trophies. This is a big deal and honor in the UK, and he's a very deserving guy. I mean, one of the true nice guys on tour. He's very well liked by everyone, exemplifies what true sportsmanship should be, and I'm really happy he got it. I mean, hopefully he can have a healthy 2018 and be contending like we all know he's capable of.
Yeah, and you know, you see the ups of Justin Rose, a guy who started out, remember, missed his first 20 cuts in a row, right? Remember? I mean, it was unbelievable. He couldn't make a cut. And then we go to a guy that won the Masters, who another Englishman, Danny Willett, who has just struggled mightily this last year. And so the year he wrote a blog post for the European Tour website. And if you want some real insight into the mind of a professional golfer, Danny Willett, it's just a sincere and open analysis of his trials and tribulations since his win at the 2016 Masters. I read this piece, and I just, you know, it really, I don't know, for some reason it really spoke to me. But we try and talk about this, that the golfers, professional golfers especially, any athlete, but professional golfers especially, are trying to perform their best week in and week out. But they have off-course issues, just like anyone with a wife, a family, or a business. The difference is that the pressure to perform can actually be a detriment. Bobby Jones quit playing golf because the expectations of golf fans were such that he should win every time he entered an event. The reality in golf is that he won at a much higher percentage of the time than is really reasonable. A golfer is constantly striving to improve and shoot lower scores, plus win more events. The joy is in the practice and the drive to improve. Most golfers play their entire lives without really winning an event. The bigger issue is when a relatively average player who can go about his business with anonymity does win a big event like Danny Willett winning the Masters, the pressure to maintain that level of play really above his ability level becomes overwhelming. Bad golf begets bad golf. More pressure is exerted between the years and it becomes too much. Quoting from the article, "There's not a day that goes by when I don't think about winning the Masters. I think about nearly every shot that week. I remember how I felt at each point throughout the week. It's amazing how you get into the same feelings on weeks when you win or do well. Clearly, it's not easy to replicate that feeling, but once you've had them, you'll let them go, and that week in April was unforgettable to say the least. Before Augusta, I was a good but normal tour pro. I was able to go about my business during the week, getting a practice round in, do my work, and just prepare quietly each week. After the Masters, every time I went to the range, every time I was on the putting green, or in a practice round, there were cameras on you, and everything's being filmed and recorded. That magnifies everything to the nth degree." Well, I'm not going to go into every little piece of this, but, you know, for Willett, it has just become too burdensome, and it affects his golf on the course. At the end of 2016, he was in contention for the Race to Dubai, and he really didn't want to play. He wanted to go home. Just think about that. He was in the running to win a big chunk of money and be known for being the best on his tour, and he just didn't want to play. He wanted to go home. And then he ended up playing good enough to be runner-up in 2016. And so then he really wanted to go home, put the club in the garage, but earlier in the year he committed to play in Hong Kong, and so he had to go travel over to Hong Kong and play. So, and that's exactly what we're saying about Justin Thomas. He's wearing himself down. He's going down to a grind. And so Willis just wore himself down. You know, he should have just called in sick and said, I ain't coming. But in the end, Willis understands that he has accomplished something that 99% of golfers never get to experience. He's working to get better and get back to the place he was when he won the green jacket. In addition, he has a wife and a child with another on the way that provides solid support when he's home. Life is good for Danny Willett. But, Carlos, this article, and I urge golf fans to go read it. Just go to europeantour.com, and you'll find it there. It's a blog post by Danny Willett. This provides a great insight into the mind and life of a touring professional, and I just want to urge everybody to go read it.
And with that, we'll wrap up our Par 5 news and move now to our practice range. For every week, Fred and I take a topic, and each one of us take our own shots at it. This week, we're going to take a look at the Charles Schwab Cup playoffs. And what can we say? I mean, there's a lot of things. But last year, the Champions Tour announced the tournament schedule for the 2016 season, and it included the inaugural Charles Schwab Cup playoffs, which is a three-tournament season-ending competition to determine the Charles Schwab Cup champion. Two of the three Charles Schwab Cup playoff events were new tournaments. The PowerShares QQQ Championship, held at Sherwood Wood Country Club in Thousand Oaks, California, was the first playoff event. The Dominion Charity Classic, set for Richmond Country Club of Virginia, James River Course, was the second playoff event. This year, they're switching places in the schedule. The Dominion Charity Classic will be first, then the PowerShares QQQ. And the Charles Schwab Cup Championship, which is the traditional season-ending event at Desert Mountain Club in Scottsdale, is the third and final playoffs tournament. The Charles Schwab Cup winner will earn $1 million bonus, and the top five finishers will also receive bonus payouts. Last year, Paul Goitis won the tournament, but it was who? I think it was Bernhard Langer, somebody named like that, some unknown guy, Bernhard Langer, who won the Charles Schwab Cup. So, Fred, who's in, who's out this year? I mean, who's favored? I mean, Bernhard Langer, that unknown person, can he win here this year?
Yes, he can, and he's going to. As I reported in the backspin, at the bottom of the field for the 72-man field at the first playoff venue, the Dominion Energy, remained the same. No one was able to move up or play their way into the field. And besides that, the only real numbers that matter over the next three events on the Champions Tour for the playoffs are the top five. And they are Bernhard Langer, Scott McCarron, Kenny Perry, Kevin Sutherland, and Jerry Kelly. So the payout is, Carlos, for first, second, third, fourth, and fifth. It's $1 million for first, $500,000 for second, $300,000 for third, $200,000 for fourth, and $100,000 for fifth. So, and those are annuities. That's not cash. They get this in an annuity. So they get a little bit every year. The deal is that Bernhard has more than a $600,000 lead on Scotty McCarron. And he's going to be hard to catch, even though in these playoff events, the points are doubled. So if you win the event and you get a $300,000 check, that's 600,000 points. Well, even if McCarron won twice and Langer won no money, he'd just barely be tied, even with double points. So the odds, and Bernhard's going to win some points. You know, he probably will win an event or two. So McCarron or one of the other top five will have to win two events to have a chance, and then Langer will need to finish well down the field and, like, last. In McCarron's last, in his defense, in McCarron's last seven events, he has two wins, a runner-up, and a third-place finish. But did I mention he's $600,000 behind? Kenny Perry, he's playing with a torn rotator cuff that's going to require surgery at the end of the year. You know, he's struggling along, trying to get it done, but, you know, I just don't see that happening for Kenny. But you know what they say, be wary of the injured golfer. Jerry Kelly and Colin Montgomery are playing the best right now of anybody. Monty won last week at the SAS, plus he won in Japan a couple weeks ago. But at number seven in the rankings and 1.7 million behind Langer, it's like impossible. Kelly has been the most consistent all year. His last five starts have been a first, a sixth, a first, a second, and a sixth. Two wins and a runner-up. He's only had one round above 69 in the last 15, and that was a 70 on Sunday. It has to be between these four or five guys. I don't see anyone in the list being a factor, but you could probably just put Bernhard Langer's name on the CFC trophy right now. Call the guy, start etching it in there, just like they show on the Open Championship before it's over, because this thing's been over, Carlos, for about a month. And I'm going to go into more of that a little bit later, but, you know, who's in, who's out, who's favored, it's Bernhard Langer.
You know, the format for this, at the completion of the SAS Championship, like you mentioned, the leading 72 players on the money list will advance to the first playoff events. There's an introduction of what it's called the Wildcard Weekend there at the SAS Championship, which allows for one player who finishes in the top 10 on the week but finishes outside of the top 72 on the season-long money list to advance to the playoffs. This year didn't happen. In a sense, I like this. I mean, that kind of a wild card weekend is another, it seems like it's unique, definitely, because it's not in any other of the races that we know of, and not that we know of, that aren't currently being, like, on the FedEx Cup, on the Race to Dubai, or any of the others that are right now, but it's kind of exciting element of the Champions Tour season. You know, it allows any player competing at that tournament to push and do their best in order to qualify for the playoffs and have a chance to win the Schwab Cup. Long shot, but it can happen. I mean, the second playoffs event then will feature the top 54 players who advance from the first, and then the Charles Schwab Cup Championship will then feature the leading 36 players who will compete for a new Charles Schwab Cup trophy designed by Tiffany & Company. Much like the FedEx Cup, this, other than that week, wildcard weekend, offer really not much of an excitement to see who's going to win it. It can happen like it happened last year, that Goitis won the tournament, and then it was, who else? Bernhard Langer, who won the cup. And in the FedEx Cup, we just saw that Xander Schauffele won the Tour Championship, but we all know it was very difficult for Justin Thomas to lose the cup. It had to be something very, very, very different. It can happen, yes, but there's not much of expectations on it. I think I don't have the answer on how to change it, but I just don't understand this type of supposed playoffs. Yes, you are cutting down the amount of players that are passing through each round, if you want to call it that way. It would be every tournament. But there has to be something that makes it more, rise the expectations on it, make more drama on it. Right now, there's none of it, and I think they should change it. So, Fred, I ask you, I mean, are we okay with what the Champions Tour is offering right now? Is it a good enough product? What do you think about this?
Well, I'm going to answer this in two pieces. First of all, let's talk a little bit about the format for the playoffs, okay? I really don't have any problem with the format for the playoffs. I kind of like it. It's just enough different than the FedEx Cup or the Race to Dubai that it's something a little different. It rewards good play in the playoffs with the double points. So, you know, the thing is, Longer has just built up such a commanding lead that no one's going to be able to catch him, even with double points. Now, if Longer would just had a decent season and was within 100,000 or 50,000 of McCarron, and Perry was, you know, not that far behind, and so you only had 150,000 spread between the top five, it's a crapshoot. I mean, you could even have scenarios where, you know, the 36th player would maybe have a chance. If the top guys all fell to the bottom of the field and didn't make very much, and the low guy made a lot. So because of double points. But in this case, Longer has just taken off. And I'm a big fan. I don't like it when they reset points. I do not like that at all. Because now you're telling the guy all the good work you did all year long, you're consistent, you did a great job, but that doesn't mean anything. We're going to give everybody a chance. I just don't like that. If you're going to have a playoff, what you did during the season should have some bearing on what happens in the playoff. So, and that's what you have in the FedEx Cup. That's what you have in the Race to the Bye, and that's what they've done here. But they do give a chance because of double points. So I do like that. I do like that concept, Carlos. Now, state of the tour, and I'm going to go on a little bit more depth on this. Without the big names doing well on Champions Tour, there is failing interest. The PGA Tour is not making the money they want to make off the Champions Tour, and they're actively looking for ways to make more money. So, or else increase or cut costs. Now, Davis Love is the biggest name out there right now, and he's not even playing full-time on the Champions Tour, and he's not winning out there. Freddie Couples, you know, is involved in the President Cup and the Ryder Cup and all that stuff. They really need him to play and win, but his back won't let him play that much, and then, you know, he can't practice that much, so he's not winning. So the idea for the Champions Tour was to create a series of events that would get the big names back out on the golf course to draw the older fan that remembered seeing these guys, you know, play on TV. You know, Arnold Palmer, Lee Trevino, Gary Player, they embraced the Champions Tour, the Senior Tour. But Jack Nicklaus never really did, and he kind of set a precedent for today's over 50s to kind of ignore it. What we're getting are the mediocre regular tour guys that want to keep playing and need the money, but are not necessarily the guys golf fans want to see. You know, Steve Stricker and Jerry Keller are great guys, but they just don't have the star power needed to bring fans to their TV sets to watch the Champions Tour. Plus, the regular tour pays so much today, players are not forced to look for work on the Champions Tour after they turn 50. A guy like Pat Perez, we just talked about earlier in the show, he's made $22 million. Yeah, he's, you know, got three wins, he's had a nice career, but $22 million. You know, can you imagine what his pension from the PGA Tour is going to be? He's not going to have to work. The Champions Tour to me is like a closed club. It's like a country club. I think they have to stop catering to past champions from the PGA Tour and open up more slots for competition. You have the same guys competing in limited fields every week. They've got to open it up more like a U.S. Open or you know, something. The PGA Champions Q School, they only take like a couple new players every year. They need to open it up, get 20 or 25 new players and find room for them in the field. Make 100-man fields instead of these 81-man fields all the time. You know, they got to stretch the purses out. You know, Michael Wan, you're talking about Michael Wan saying, ladies, you got to take less money because it just ain't here. You got to make the tour viable. Well, they need to stretch these purses out and make the guys earn a buck. They need to break up the old boys club a little bit. So, Carlos, I know that's kind of some radical thinking. I just don't think the Champions Tour in its current format is working. They have to do some things differently.
and start by changing the name instead of the Champions Tour. Let's put it more open. I mean, you're just relegating it to, like you say, small club. It's like they're just having their private tour. And I have to agree with you. This is not going anywhere. And I don't know how the sponsors see it, but definitely it's not attracting what it is. They have to really change it, open it up to other players and make it more appealing. But definitely this way, it has to change. It's not a total good product. I mean, yeah, we're seeing some great play from some great players like Bernhard Langer. There's Monty there. Now Miguel Angel Jimenez. But like you say, it's just the same group of people dominating all the time. So, yeah, I have to agree. Any other final thoughts before we close this and go to our final putts?
I do not.
All right, so let's move on and let's talk about our final putts. As usual, I take the first ones. Tim Clark is coming up on the 2-year anniversary since he last played on the PGA Tour at the 2016 Career Builder Challenge. Instead of taking a major medical extension, he's using a one-time exemption for being among the top 50 in career money. He's right now number 47. Whether he plays depends on his health, you know, so we'll see what happens there. Also, using a one-time exemption for top 50 in the career money is two-time U.S. Open champion Retief Goosen, who's number 26 in career money. He turns 49 in February, narrowly kept his card for last season, so he needs it. Ernie Els, who's number 25, and KJ Choi, number 25th. Number 5, Ernie Els, and number 25, KJ Choi, are using one-time exemptions for the top 25 on the career money list. Earls is turning 48 next week, and can you still use the one-time exemption for top 50? So it's sad to see that happening to them, but unfortunately they're really not the same anymore. Bo Van Pelt is also on a career money exemption, but that has been carried over from 2015 to 16. He hasn't played since Pebble Beach 2016 after having surgery to repair a torn labrum in his left arm. So those are some of the players that are using those exemptions. Now let's talk about Adam Scott, who will be joining fellow Masters Tournament champion Sergio Garcia at home on the Gold Coast for the Australian PGA Championship from November 30 to December 3. The 10-time European Tour winner confirmed his participation in the tournament and is excited to welcome Sergio to Australian shores. While Australian fans will be able to see Garcia in action on the ISPS Handa PGA Tour of Australasia for the first time since 2010, Scott is hoping that they will be cheering him towards his second Kirkwood Cup victory. Also, world number 5, John Rahm, will be making his WGC HSBC Champions debut at Sheshon International Golf Club next week. So that's big for him. He has been very good at the Race to Dubai Championship. He's number 3 right now, and he's going to be joining many of golf's leading stars. They are all ready for the WGC in Shanghai. And finally, the Dubai Desert Classic, Fred, will be the center of attention in the golfing world next year, and it's not just due to the quality of the players on the field. Paige Spiranak, who is a glamorous professional golfer who has shot to fame via her 1.2 million followers Instagram account, will act as the official starter for the tournament, which is held at the Emirates Golf Club from January 25 to the 28th. I mean, that role involves announcing each player into the field, onto the tee, and was most famously performed by Ivor Robson, whose unmistakable rising Scottish tones were heard at the Open for 40 years and made him for many the voice of golf. But rather than a silver-haired, suited septuagenarian, this European Tour event will be started by a 24-year-old blonde whose Instagram account shows up her skimpy attire as often as her superb golf swing. I tell you, Fred, he keeps just pushing the right button. That's my guy.
You bet I'm going to be watching Dubai Desert Classic, Carlos.
I'll watch
not
the announcements.
Then, just for Paige.
I'll watch the announcement. After that, I'll see what else happens.
Hey, we got John Daly is following in Arnold Palmer's footsteps. Well, kind of. in releasing a line of drinks featuring alcohol, of course.
What?
The label reads, the label reads, John Daly, grip it and sip it. It's basically an Arnold Palmer, you know, half iced tea, half lemonade, but with the addition of vodka. There you go. Put a little tang in your life. It has the tagline, our unique blend of black tea and lemonade flavors hits hard, just like John Daly's swing. How can you lose with a tagline like that? You'll want to watch for that in your pro shop or 19th hole. Rory McIlroy's childhood home is going up for sale. It's reported, the Global Golf Post reporting that Rory's childhood home in Hollywood, Northern Ireland is up for sale. They're looking for offers of $239,000, almost £240,000, or about $318,000 U.S., according to a listing at thepropertynews.com. It's a four-bedroom, semi-detached home near Belfast. Features an outdoor putting green and a garage. It has been converted into a swing analysis room. And also, the Irish Times reports that Rory donated almost $1 million to charity last year. So good for him. And then, Carlos, I'm going to wrap up with just a quick little piece here. We asked last week that everyone do whatever they could to help, especially Puerto Rico, but also Houston and Florida that got hit by the severe hurricanes. And it appears that the Antigua Apparel Company, one of the largest sports apparel companies in the world and known for providing shirts worn by many professional golfers, Stacey Lewis, is one of the Antigua ambassadors. They gave cash and over 7,000 pieces of clothing to Puerto Rico hurricane efforts, Carlos. That's all I have for tonight, sir.
And with that, Back Niners, that will wrap up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or TuneIn. Also, remember, you can see on Roku TV. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back Nine Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy a great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Napa know-how.
Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
My new Jack in the Box ribeye burger is made with 100% premium ribeye beef, grilled onions, a red wine glaze, and creamy Havarti cheese. It's fast food's first ribeye burger, so I'm inviting the whole industry to come try it. That's why I set up this giant 5-mile-long dining table. Oh, hang on. Hello?
Hey, Jack, we're at the far end of the table. Can you pass the napkins?
Sure, I'll pass them down. Should be there in a couple of hours. Come try my new Havarti and grilled onion and all-American ribeye burgers. Only at Jack in the Box. At participating restaurants.